knowledge fight. Dan and Jordan, I am sweating. KnowledgeFight.com. It's time to pray.
I have great respect for Knowledge Fight.
Knowledge Fight. I'm sick of them posing as if they're the good guys, saying we are the bad guys. Knowledge Fight.
Dan and Jordan.
Knowledge Fight.
I need money. Andy in Kansas. Stop it. Andy in Kansas. Andy. It's time to pray. Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first time caller. I'm a huge fan.
I love your work.
Knowledge Fight.
KnowledgeFight.com. I love you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Knowledge Fight. I'm Dan.
I'm Jordan.
We're a couple dudes like to sit around, worship at the altar of Celine, and talk a little bit about Alex Jones.
Oh, indeed we are. Dan.
Jordan.
Dan.
What's up?
I have a quick question for you.
Yeah, what do we got?
What's your bright spot today, buddy?
Why don't you go first?
My bright spot, Dan, is that recently, I believe it might even be out today, I was a guest on the God pod.
Mm. You got to talk to God.
I know. You know what was fun about that is I feel like the cult leader who prophesied me is currently living out like a Twilight Zone dream version of like, hey man, here's what'll happen. Mm-hmm. You think he's gonna talk to God. Wrong. He's gonna go on the podcast.
He's gonna do a podcast.
Yeah. Oh, he's gonna have all these. Nope. He's gonna do the Twilight Zone version of everything.
Well, at the risk of sounding like the lead singer of Dishwalla, tell me all your thoughts on God.
He's a nice guy.
I'd really like to meet her.
No, it was fun. They were great. There was a Psyche and Satan and the literal Christian devil was there. It was great. It was a good time. Check it out wherever podcasts are sold. It's Happy Meals, I believe. Yeah.
That's the title of it? Happy Meals?
No. Oh. No, it's called The God Pod.
The God Pod.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, that is a lot of fun.
Yeah. It was great.
I'm glad you had a good time.
It was fantastic.
I will be damned because I didn't go on it.
Yes, that is true. That is true.
I would say that my bright spot today, Jordan, is Lee. Over in the UK, just got a little zip package. Some candy.
Yeah, well, some candy.
Very much appreciate it.
Some candy.
Yeah, got some British sweets and a giant thing of hobnobs, which famously on the streets, my favorite of the British streets.
Yeah, they are.
The oats.
I will say that I don't know if I can forgive them for this 12-month matured Christmas pudding.
Yeah, what happened when I opened the package?
12-month matured.
Do you want to walk the listeners through what happened when I opened the package?
So he opened the package and he said, it is candy, dumbass.
Well, because it's labeled fragile.
It's labeled fragile,
and
so I said it wasn't
candy. I said,
candy.
It's going to be fragile candy. And you said, it's impossible.
There's no way that the candy went. So obviously it was candy.
Right.
And then you just handed me a 12-month matured Christmas pudding and said, this one's for you and your wife.
Yeah, and the brandy. mince pies.
I was going to bring those up.
I will take one for the team and have all the candy.
Sure.
You can have the Christmas pudding.
I'll eat the 12-month mature. Oh, boy.
Yep.
Let's try it out.
So, Jordan, today we are time traveling.
Ooh.
I felt the urge to go back to the past.
Yes.
Every now and again you need a re-up. You need to go back and get a taste of what things used to be like. Mm-hmm. And like I mentioned on our last episode, I got bored of the August time frame.
Yeah.
So I decided to jump to December. Mm-hmm. And that was a very strategic decision on my part because December 2003 is when Saddam Hussein ends up being found.
That's right.
And so I would love to see the lead up to that and how Alex responds when Saddam is found. Because as we know, Alex believes that he's in Belarus with his kids and a bunch of gold.
His two very alive sons
that
he believes are there.
So we will get to that when it gets to that. But for now, we are just checking in on December 1st and seeing what the path leads us to.
Excellent.
And today we're going to be going over December 1st and 2nd, 2003. And I'm going to just give a little bit of it's not a warning, but this is going to be a little bit of a shorter episode. But the reality is something that we talk about, I think, is actually very important.
Okay.
And so, I don't know, we might hit an hour, we might not. But I do think that this is something that happens is definitely like, I can't believe this.
Listen, it's about quality of minute now. Now we've been doing 4-hour episodes. We've been doing all that stuff. Sure. We've got that under our belts. Now it's about minute quality.
Right.
You know?
And that's why on our last episode, I talked about passing out under a tarp.
Exactly. It's about getting the quality minutes, condensing them down. We're getting for efficiency. That's our goal.
I don't know if you want me to put your business on the streets, but I know that you've been getting back into stand-up a little
bit. I have, yes.
I didn't know if you how closely you were guarding that, but I know that laughs per minute is a very important...
Huge.
That is... a stat that I know that you're tracking right now.
I've always been a huge laughs per minute guy.
Yeah.
You know, because I have those jokes that last 2 or 3 minutes with only one huge punchline. Mm. So my laughs per minute, way low.
Yeah.
Way low.
Under one.
Under one is not a good laughs per minute. I have been told that many a time.
I never tracked that, and I never really understood, like, how do you gauge, like, what is and is not a successful laugh?
Yeah.
Like, what if you get a couple people laughing in the audience, but really hard.
Right.
Or just a good size laugh from everybody. Do they count? Do they each count as one?
I mean, who's got the decibel meter? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think it all, every part of it became incredibly stupid to me after I listened to Dana Gould's Black Dahlia bit.
Mm.
That 5-minute long bit with one punchline is so spectacular. He's got you hanging on every word, and then the final punch breaks everything open. The whole place explodes. It's perfect.
Or the John Glazer and John Benjamin Forget a Buddies bit, which in theory has one joke within 20 something minutes.
There was John Benjamin was the David Cross bit that they did.
The for abortion the, doctor?
No, the Comedians of Comedy tour they did. Or not one, they did a one-off where
I don't remember what that bit was.
They both recorded this long thing where they started leaving the stage and then talking to a recording of the other, ostensibly because they were at the train station.
Yeah.
What are you doing back at the train station? Just forever.
The two of them had a bit on the Invite Them Up CD.
Yeah.
Was David Cross was a doctor who would put babies back inside and then kill them. And John Benjamin was interviewing him and horrified by the procedure.
That's great. That's so good.
Anyway, yes. We have an episode to do, but before that, let's take a little moment, Jordan, to say hello to some new walks.
Oh, that's a great idea.
So first, happy early birthday on this one to Happy Little Miss Info Raccoon. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, Mike from Akron. Davina loves you, pronounced Davina. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
Next, at when it's spelled kebab hut, it's hard not to think they're rubbing it in our face! Exclamation point. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Next, this was actually inspired by today. Ironically, they sent this in prior, but it is actually in response to today's episode.
Oh, my God.
What do we want? Time travel. When do we want it? That's irrelevant. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
It's a witch!
And genetically enhanced chicken. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
And we got a couple of technocrats in the mix here too, Jordan. So first, gay frog wrangler who worships at the altar of kudzu. Thank you so much. You are now a technocrat. And George Soros in a hot tub. We call that globalist warming. Thank you so much. You are now a technocrat.
I'm a policy wonk. I have risen above my enemies. I might quit tomorrow, actually. I'm just going to take a little breaky now. A little breaky for me. And then we're going to come back. And I'm going to start the show over. But I'm the devil. I got to be taken off here. I'll do all this. Blah, 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 blah. Fuck you. Fuck you. I got plenty of words for you. But at the end of the day, fuck you and your new world order. And fuck the horse you rode in on. And all your shit.
Maybe today should be my last broadcast. I mean, maybe I'll just be gone a month, maybe 5 years. Maybe I'll walk out of here tomorrow and you never see me again. That's really what I want to do. I never want to come back here again. I apologize to the crew and the listeners yesterday that I was legitimately having breakdowns on air. I'll be better tomorrow.
He's not. Not even in the past. You go back to December 2003. Still not good. Ah. Not good.
Unfortunate.
So before we get to today's episode, I wanted to touch on something from our last episode. And that is, we talked about Alex's coverage of the medical assistance and dying legislation in Canada.
Yeah.
And I wanted to loop back and touch back on that here a little bit before we launch into 2003. I don't believe that we said anything that I disagree with necessarily in hindsight, but I did get some messages from listeners that have been really helpful in terms of illustrating ways that we could have discussed that issue better and from a broader perspective. One of the points we could have done a better job of stressing is that there is an inadequate social safety net in terms of support for people living with disabilities in Canada. And this is a very severe issue when it comes to the point where poverty ends up being a contributing factor towards someone wanting to pursue MAID. The case of Amir Farsoud, who we discussed on the last episode, involved that dynamic where his disability payments weren't enough to keep him out of poverty and weren't enough to allow him to find a place to live, which would leave him living with severe pain unhoused. We did talk about how his case illustrates the need for greater social welfare, but I wasn't really aware of the endemic problem that advocates around disability-related issues have been raising around the intersection of poverty and disability, and how this makes the expansion of MAID to include people whose deaths aren't reasonably imminent could contribute towards a program that's dangerously close to eugenics. This is really important stuff, and I'd like to learn more about it and possibly talk to someone who knows more in the future. My coverage of Alex's content on the subject has a tendency to sometimes not see all of the broader context and implications of a story because I'm looking at what he's saying and then evaluating that. So my apologies for not stressing some of the more important aspects of what rational people's complaints about MAID actually are. There's a real critique and an Alex critique,
yeah.
And I'm focusing on the Alex critique, and sometimes that means I don't see some of the more reasonable criticisms.
Yeah, it's hard to completely view an issue in a rational perspective when somebody is also screaming like, no, you shouldn't do that. You should teach people how to be a suicide bomber. And you're like, no, I don't even understand how I'm supposed to. Yeah.
And some of that's the challenge. And some of that is just, you miss some things sometimes.
It happens.
That being said, I do think that some of our conversation was surrounding the question of how social safety welfare programs would be a solution to some of the confounding factors that were being discussed in these cases, though I think we could have done a better job of highlighting and focusing in on what some of those problems were.
Right.
Now, the second problem, which I actually think is a bit bigger, is that there have been some reported cases of people with disabilities being offered MAID as opposed to them pursuing it. Further, Canadian laws have not built in oversight and regulations that many feel would be needed to make sure that that kind of care is being applied responsibly, and that's a really big concern. I do think that advocates and human rights experts have a valid point when they say that this legislation does have the potential to have a dehumanizing effect on people with disabilities and, in essence, create a perception, whether in the mind of the public or in the medical profession, that their lives are somehow less worth living, and that is definitely unacceptable. I'm not sure what the answer is, but I'm going to read more up on this and try to listen to folks with better perspectives, but I am confident in my opposition to Alex's coverage of the story. The takeaway that I have is that there are more reasons to take this seriously, and that Alex's coverage paints a cartoonish version of the problem and exists in direct opposition to the most logical elementary solution to helping some parts of this, which is a greater social investment in lifting people out of poverty.
Yeah.
And so for anybody who took issue with some of our commentary, I apologize that there was a slice of this and a section of it that was missing.
Fair.
And I hope we'll do a better job of being mindful of a lot of that stuff, in future instances.
We do our best. And then if we don't do the best, we listen when people tell us we didn't.
We try to.
It's kind of simple. Yeah.
So, Jordan, today, December 1st is where we're starting.
Mm-hmm.
This episode sucks.
Okay.
There's nothing going on.
On December 1st?
Nothing.
But it's the first day of December in 2003. There was so much going on. There was,
So the first hour...
No Child Left Behind?
The first hour of the show is mostly just Alex being mad that Bush went to Iraq to give out turkeys for Thanksgiving.
Oh, yeah, I remember that one.
And there's just a lot of that. That's the vibe you get.
Yeah.
Just a lot of treading water and complaining about Turkeygate.
Yeah, we think about all the absurd things and insane things that Trump did because they were also terrifying
and
evil.
Throwing up paper towels?
Yeah, 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 like all of that stuff because it was also evil in a weird way. You know, throwing out paper towels was condescending and fucked up and almost infantilizing.
Mm-hmm.
But Bush going to the place that he genocided and giving out turkeys for a genocide holiday? That's metaphorically more fucked up than I can think of.
Yeah, that's an onion of irony.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
So we have a couple clips from December 1st. There's not much to discuss here, but it's good to check in every now and again to see how Alex feels about various right-wing figures.
Sure.
He still hates Michael Savage.
Well,
spoiler alert.
Yeah, he's a hippie.
And Alex also has, you know, you hear him complain a lot about people calling him and his friends Nazis and stuff. He's like, it's not cool. You shouldn't do that.
Right.
Well, I mean, when it comes to Michael Savage.
Yeah, Michael Savage says he's a fake neocon. I have heard him. I probably listened 15 times and I've heard him 10 times say, so he must say it every hour on the hour. Every person that disagrees with the government should be arrested and put in a forced labor camp to, quote, pay for their keep. He says anyone that disagrees should be arrested, and that's his conservatism while he protects George Bush and his mindless Nazi audience, I guess, must think going under martial law is good.
So, yeah, his audience is Nazis, and Michael Savage, on the hour, every hour, saying everybody who disagrees needs to go to a forced labor camp.
There is the station check you got to do.
Sure. Time
obviously.
And temp.
Time and temp, for sure. Traffic, traffic every 15.
Traffic on the twos.
Yeah. And then, of course, you got to remind people that if you speak out against the government, you should be put in a forced labor camp.
Yeah.
That's just regular morning zoo crew.
Michael Savage sucks, but even this is a little bit unfair to the depiction of him. Like, all right, man. So it's just funny though, because later on Alex will be like, Michael Savage was a pioneer, one of the first in this space, and a hero and a legend.
Well, he was the one who organized the mindless Nazi crowd. That's what he got him.
Well, and Alex, Michael Savage started accepting his calls.
And so it's a big difference how quick that goes.
Yeah.
I got a text. He's a legend.
Yeah. So Alex takes a number of calls on this show, and one of them is a very sad man who's handed out thousands of Alex's tapes.
And I'm just trying to get tapes to the public officials, and I'm asking everybody, please help me in some way. I'm so tired, Mr. Jones, but we need more people to put out more tapes or to give them constitutions.
Charles, how many copies of my video have you handed out?
Oh, wait, I got it. Wait a minute, right here. Okay, altogether, 4,212. Well, that's since 1999, you know. I've been doing it for a long time.
What effect is giving out 4,000 copies of my videos done in your area?
Well, my life.
I moved in a new parish, but the last parish I was in, I got the whole police department to change their attitude toward things and be a little bit more lenient and talk to me about it instead of condemning me. I made friends with a whole police force. I can go into the police building, and everybody shakes my hand, and they agree with the tapes. Some of them, their mouths just dropped open. They asked me to make a tape for their mother, or they gave me extra tapes. They even gave me money to buy copies.
Well, police, we found the videos are working up police and military even more than the general public, because they're investigators. They already know about the criminal mind. They already know the information is accurate. We just lay it all out on the table for them. Thanks for the call, Charles.
Thank you.
So I suspect that cops are more affected by Alex's earlier documentaries because those films are kind of veiled threats against the police. They're essentially arguing that the police are the strong arm of the globalists and will be used to enslave the population and thus will be the Patriots' enemy unless they're explicitly on the side of the Patriots. The message is essentially, when things go bad, we will kill you unless you're on our side.
Right.
It's the same messaging in a ton of militia materials. For instance, the book Unintended Consequences involves a plot to assassinate law enforcement carried out by Patriots who've had enough of gun grabbing. This isn't necessarily what you'd call a direct threat, but it also definitely has an undertone in these materials that it might seem to help explain why they resonate so strongly with people in law enforcement. They're more or less telling any viewer in law enforcement that there's a war coming that the Patriots will win, and they need to decide if they want to be one of the good guys or if they want to die as a villain.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's a very emotional appeal that's made in those documentaries, too. And you could see if you're a cop, you might identify with the people being labeled a villain and be like, I don't want to be a villain.
Sure.
I don't know.
I mean, if I had a time machine right now, I would go back and tell everybody to be like, do you hear this? The cops like Alex Jones. Do you not understand what's going to happen soon? The cops like Alex Jones.
Yeah, but the problem with that is you listen to this and Alex is a liar. So It's really easy to like hear this and think like Alex is just blowing smoke about cops loving his stuff. But maybe there was more truth to that than necessarily we're comfortable with.
Yeah. And that's that, you know, those documentaries, that the way that he would... I don't know what it would be like to be a cop then getting this stuff, because he was sending those to cops. The guy was starting to send those to the cops around 1999. So this is a decade after...
Pre-9/11.
Yeah, pre-9/11, but after OKC.
Yeah.
So we're in that uncertainty zone of who the bad terrorists are.
Mm-hmm.
So the cops have got to be in this weird no man's land where they're like, we want to, but they don't know who.
Mm-hmm.
So I assume this is how it goes bad.
It may be a contributing factor.
It could be.
So we get one more call that we're going to listen to here from December 1st.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, so when we talked about Alex's war, and we talked about Glenn Greenwald's interview, I said on the episode that Alex is a fucking liar. His dad was in the John Birch Society. And like, he, you know, because in the film, he tries to present himself as just like, I had some of these influences around or whatever. Yep. It's like, no, you're in a Birch fucking household.
Yeah.
And I got some pushback on Twitter, even from some folks who have who aren't random people.
Interesting.
Let's say.
Uh-oh.
And so I just want to play this just to reiterate that Alex's dad was in the John Birch Society.
Okay.
Let's talk to Brian in Illinois. Brian, you're on the air.
How you doing, Alex?
Good, sir.
I wanted to ask you about what your thoughts are on the John Birch Society. I know you said your dad was a member.
Well, I get questions on this probably about once a month on air, every day via email. I think the John Birch Society puts out great books and tapes, a great magazine. I think they put out really good information, and I don't think they're quite aggressive enough, but they've done more good than I've done. I think they have a great membership. My father isn't a member now. He was a member in high school and went around giving anti-communist speeches, but he's not really active in politics now.
Great.
So another thing that's of note in there is that Alex thinks that the John Birch Society isn't aggressive
too weak. They don't say it. They don't go hard.
Right.
That's the problem.
And this, to me, is so in line with that illusion that people had about Alex not being right wing because he criticizes Bush. No, he criticizes Bush because he's a communist.
Yeah, he thinks
Bush is a commie.
He criticized the John Birch Society for not being aggressive enough.
Yes.
Yeah, that's their issue.
And you know, I'm putting together this library and I've been reading some of these materials.
Oh, they're aggressive.
they're
insanely aggressive.
Pretty aggro.
Jesus.
Yeah, so anyway, let's put that baby to bed.
Mm-hmm.
And go to December 2nd. This episode starts.
Yeah.
And Alex announces a guest.
Sometimes I think you go into the past just because somebody said that something happened in the past and you're like, oh, it fucking did.
Yeah, go fuck yourself.
Go fuck yourself. I'll find it. Yeah. I am there.
Right.
I am in both the past and the present.
So Alex has a guest that he announces on the 2nd. And this name will not necessarily ring out to you, but this is a fucking huge problem.
Okay.
All right, folks. It's Tuesday, the 2nd of December, 2003. I'm Alex Jones, your host. We have a special guest for you in the second hour, documentary filmmaker and author Eric Hufschmid, who has done just an unbelievable job exposing the mathematical impossibilities, the frauds surrounding September 11th.
So Eric Hufschmid wrote a book titled Painful Questions, an analysis of the September 11th attack, which hasn't held up well as time has gone on. as is a theme with 9/11 conspiracy stuff, particularly from this early stage.
Yeah.
However, this is not what I find interesting or troubling about Eric Hufschmidt.
Hmm.
I find his aggressive anti-Semitism far more important.
Oh, so a problem from his problem is not aggro. He's not too...
He's pretty aggro.
He's pretty aggro, okay.
Hufschmidt has a YouTube channel where he's posted some clips of his public access TV interviews and also a clip from the movie A Bug's Life, which he claims is allegorical. The Jews, or in his term, the Zionists, are the grasshoppers and the non-Jews are the ants.
Sure.
His description of the video reads, quote, from the movie A Bug's Life, the leader of the grasshoppers, parentheses Zionists, explained what would happen if the stupid ants, parentheses Goyim, were to realize that they don't have to be under the control of the grasshoppers. For some reason, around 2009, his channel shifted over to some recipes and cooking content, and then to videos of bugs. I was sort of curious about this, but it seems like it's not a mystery worth solving, so I left it alone. He's a big-time Zionist-occupied government type of conspiracist, and that's his underlying theory about 9/11.
Right.
I found a page under the name Eric Hufschmidt on the site Clipit, which seemed to, like, it had some pretty offensive content on it. But
oh, yeah?
I wasn't sure if I was going to use it for this episode on the off chance that it wasn't this guy's page.
Sure.
However, I was able to satisfy my own doubts by doing a little bit of cross-referencing. For instance, two of the audio clips he's posted on that page are about Carly Franz, a woman who has made allegations about being ritualistically abused by the Masons. Incidentally, on his own website, hugequestions.com, Eric routinely talks about Franz and her allegations.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was able to find overlaps like this, I'm pretty confident that this is his audio page. Actually, I know for sure it is. So that means I'm going to play this anti-Semitic trash for you.
Oh, no.
Mic down for this because this is going to blow your mind.
Oh, no.
If the Jews had been nicely behaved people, we would love them. It's their own fault that we're disgusted with them.
This song is over 5 minutes long, but I think you get the idea there.
That sounds like it's from the fucking Firefly unit. Like you would go into a space bar and they would be playing this propaganda theme song while you were in a cantina. Like, fucking, this is crazy.
Yeah.
That's fucked.
Within under a minute, he's throwing in some blood libel, saying that if Jews were better behaved, everyone wouldn't hate them.
Man.
God, it's just awful.
That is so fucked up. Mm-hmm. I feel like there is a man who made it. Did he do that himself?
I suspect he did, because that voice that's talking at the beginning is him.
Yeah, that's him.
And it continues throughout the song. Because of that, I wanted to just include a few more things that he says in this song that I think border on calling for genocide. And here's the next clip.
The Jews are getting away with a lot of their crimes partly because most people can't believe that a group of humans would behave in such a manner. Maybe they're not the same type of human as the rest of us. The Jews claim to be a different race, and they may be correct.
So here we have a suggestion that Jewish people aren't human. That's not good, but Jordan, it gets worse.
The pattern I see all throughout history is that every society treated Jews with decency and respect. But after a while, that society got tired of the abuse, lies, crimes, murders, and other horrible behavior of Jews. Then that society threw them out. And the society that accepted them treated them with decency. And after a while, they also got tired of the abuse. And look at the behavior of Jews during the 20th century. It's the same pattern. For example, the Germans treated the Jews with decency and respect. But the Jews decided to abuse the Germans. The Jews.
All right, so go ahead and check off that box that's marked claiming the Holocaust was the Jews' fault.
Yep.
We're covering a lot of bases here, Hufschmidt.
I saw the movie Clockwork Orange way too young.
Mm-hmm.
I was like 8 when I saw it because it was an accidental thing that was on TV late at night for some reason. And you know that scene where he's got the Beethoven playing, where he's got the horrific images and he's got the eyes. You know, I've always been like, oh, that's horrific. I can't imagine
that's
what that would feel
that's
like.
That's kind of like what this podcast is.
This is exactly that. What you just played for me, I finally am like, oh, I got Clockwork Orange.
Yeah.
It legitimately.
This laptop is too far away for you to hit pause on it.
Yes, absolutely. My cords would rip out. We'd have to start all over.
I mean, this is just bad.
This is horrendous.
Yeah. And so we have to get to the crescendo, though. So here is the here's the last clip of his song.
Let's imagine what the 20th century might have been like if the Jews had instigated all of these wars and terrorist attacks. Let's imagine a world without these disgusting people.
So Hofschmidt is actually suggesting that a world without Jews would be a better world, and essentially he's making an argument in favor of extermination. This is one of the most blunt pieces of content I've seen one of Alex's guests produce, and the fact that it's delivered with a shitty techno song just makes things a little bit less... DJ Danarchy,
oh,
he
my
is
God.
Not.
No.
I even regret bringing up his name
in this
context. I'm sorry. So anyway, that's the guy who Alex has on his show to talk about 9/11.
Great.
You may have noticed that the line, 9/11's just the start, is in that really anti-Semitic song. So this seems like a really bad booking on Alex's part. Unless he's trying to do a Nazi show. In that case, this is a great call. Good booking.
Well, see, the thing about Michael Savage is it was all the thoughtless Nazis.
Ah.
Alex is going for the thoughtful Nazis.
Right.
They're the Nazis that are like, I'm going to hold the door open for you. Mm. That kind of Nazi, you know?
Also, this episode is in December 2003, and by as early as 2007, Hofschmidt had turned on Alex and decided that he was working for the Jewish cabal.
Sure.
So in addition to being an offensive and meritless guest, this is also something Alex should look back on with personal embarrassment. Here he is, elevating the stature of a lunatic bigot who by his own devices probably tops out at about being interviewed on Public Access, and then he's giving him credibility that he will just be attacked with later when Eric Hofschmidt finds out that Alex's wife is Jewish.
Yeah.
So,
great. Man.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just me. I think that once you've thought your way into being like, oh, see, it would be better if there just weren't any of those, you're in a bad place.
Totally.
You're in a bad place.
Totally. Yeah. Except if you're talking about Christmas puddings.
Ah, that is a good point.
But you, unfortunately, have one.
Yeah, well, we can't all win.
So, you know, I think that there's a lot of people who are under the notion that Alex's show in the past used to not be as extreme as it was, as it may be now or something. And I think that's an easy perception to have.
Of course.
Because there's a story that's written about Alex's past, and it's a story that the only people generally who have any awareness of what his show was like are people who love Alex and aren't going to necessarily push back on the narrative.
Right.
And also because, I don't know, maybe Eric Hofschmidt knows what he's doing, he doesn't yell about the Jews on Alex's show.
It's a wise move on
his part.
And
so there's a crypto element to the conversation that they're having about 9/11. And if you just listen to this uncritically, then you'd just be like, oh, this guy thinks that the buildings were blown up or whatever.
Yeah.
When in reality, what Alex is doing is mainstreaming, elevating, and normalizing somebody who's essentially blaming Jewish people for 9/11. And on the back of that, rationalizing an argument for extermination delivered in techno song.
Yeah.
So I think that this show is about as bad as it can get, really, in the past.
Yeah. It is. There's no way that he can't not know that he's got massive anti-Semitic beliefs.
Well, I mean, let's tease that out.
Yeah, right.
Is it possible?
No.
Maybe.
That he doesn't have that. Okay, maybe it's possible. It's possible Alex doesn't know that he wants to exterminate the Jews.
No, let's explore the possibility that Alex actually doesn't even know that this guy has deeply anti-Semitic views.
Okay, so
what does that reveal? It reveals a complete abdication of responsibility to vet your guests.
There you go.
At best, that's what we have.
Yep.
At best, Alex is platforming and, I mean, quite frankly, advocating people support
a Nazi.
Because he didn't want to do his job and figure out who he's talking to.
Right.
And that's probably bad.
Yeah.
I mean, it's bad. It's probably bad.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Terrible.
No, that's why it's so ridiculous, because the first thought I had was like, oh, well, that's why you vet your guests. And then the problem was, whether or not they vetted him or not, still could have gone either direction. You know, they could have vetted him and been like, hey, so long as you don't say the Jew stuff, we'll use you on our 9/11 episode for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Or they could have not vetted him and been like, well, let's just hope he doesn't reveal that he's a complete and total Nazi, you know?
I mean, even as somebody who, you know, is an expert in Alex Jones and has
right.
listened to all this shit, I can't really say for sure.
Right.
Like, I think the laziness argument is more compelling.
Well, you know, Tucker vetted Kanye, that's for sure.
After the fact, by editing.
Well, exactly. something along those lines. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that at a certain point, the argument for that laziness and naivete or whatever kind of is more difficult to support given the trends and the...
Yeah.
Aggressive support of Hutton, Gibson, and
claiming the JBS didn't go far enough.
There's some problems.
I think that Huffschmidt would agree that the JBS didn't go far enough.
I think, well, actually, he thinks that the JBS is partially run by the Jewish cabal, and they're in on it, along with Alex Jones and Webster
right.
Tarpley and basically everybody.
Well, then he's just lonely. And he's watching his... That's why he's posting all of his bug videos on YouTube now.
We're going to talk about his loneliness here in a little
oh,
bit.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So, Alex intros Huffschmidt, and, you know, bad.
Eric Huffschmidt is a software designer, computer programmer. He joins us, author, filmmaker, stepping up to the plate and waking up a lot of people in the process.
Waking them up to what?
Yeah.
That is an important question. Big question.
To how Nazism is bad. That's what he's waking people up to.
No, I don't think he is.
I don't think so either.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think he's going on public access shows and now getting called up to the big leagues with Alex. And inevitably the waking up. See, waking up is this, it's seen as this universal good or whatever.
Sure.
And unfortunately, it's not. The waking up metaphor isn't good.
Mm-hmm.
It's not actually waking up.
No.
It's shifting your perspective or something. And you know, what Alex is saying is this guy is waking people up. And what he's actually saying is he's shifting people's point of reference.
Right.
And that can be a good or a bad thing. And Alex wants the presentation to be he's shifting people's perceptions about 9/11 being an inside job.
Right.
But in reality, if you explore Eric Huffschmidt and you go to his website and you know take in his material, your perspective is going to be attempted to be shifted to blaming Jews for everything.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it
including
is.
Including his own loneliness, which we'll get to.
Right. And what it reminds me of now, like the way that you've just described waking up is, in this context, reminds me so much of the Sandman comics. At one point, his ironic punishment is the guy is an eternal, he's eternally waking.
Mm-hmm.
So he's always living that nightmare where you wake up from the dream and you're like, oh, it was just a dream. Mm-hmm. And then it's a nightmare. And then you wake up from the dream. And that is kind of what they're experiencing. You're always being woken up again to this new thing. Now you're woken up to this new thing that
right.
you need to be terrified
of. You have to get blank pilled.
Totally. You were
this pilled, that pilled.
You were awake yeah. to 9/11, but now you need to be awake to this. Now you need to be awake like it's a never-ending nightmare.
Yeah, and I think
yeah.
it's something that's so easily exploitable by folks like Alex and folks in this world because, you know, the tendency to believe in conspiracy theories, it really does build upon itself.
Right.
Believing in one thing makes you more likely to believe in another and then mm-hmm. another. And so when it's like, ha, 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 let me reveal another thing to you, that's the market.
Yeah, and part of that feedback is the excitement you get from waking up again.
God, it's so exciting.
Oh, I found it all, you know, like all over again. Instead, you're just consigning yourself to doing it all again the next day, forever and ever until you die.
Yep.
Ugh.
So Hufschmidt comes in, and I don't think I'm really that interested in his perspective, quite frankly, even about 9/11.
What about techno?
He's written a book on 9/11 and the cover up there. And made one of the best films out there on the subject that's unlocking a lot of minds. And it's been a lot of new developments, and we wanted to have him. I've only had him on the show once before. That was about a year ago. We've got Eric now back up with us. Eric Hufschmidt, for those that just joined us or never heard you before, tell folks how you got involved in this and who you are, what you do, and what you put together.
Actually, I got into it in a roundabout kind of way because I just developed software for a living, and after the towers went down, I was noticing on the internet there's a lot of people that were called conspiracy nuts talking about how, oh, we shouldn't trust this government of ours, something's funny about this attack. And you know, I was like most people, I wasn't paying that much attention, I was dismissing them as nuts. But eventually they got through to me, you know, the constant complaining, and I started looking closely at what happened on that event. And that's when it occurred to me that those towers looked like they were blown up. Building 7 looks like it had explosives in it also. And I was thinking, my first reaction was to tell people about it. You know, I put some documents on the internet saying it looks like these towers were blown up.
Okay, so 9/11 happens.
Yep.
And he's not that interested. Not paying that much attention.
Not that big a deal.
Right.
What are you going to do? Okay.
Just going about my life.
All right. That's New York.
Right.
Right, but when they started calling people weird,
right,
that's when I was like, I gotta get to the bottom of this.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, a giant world-changing terrorist attack happens, and look, I gotta do laundry. Like, I got things going on.
Right. I'm not gonna think about that and go, oh, well, the future of everything is irrevocably changed for the worse now.
Look, I could pay attention to this, but I've got anti-Semitic techno to
make. Oh, I can't figure out this beat!
Yeah, so I don't know. I don't think I'm not impressed by his backstory.
No.
So Alex wants Eric to really explain what happened here.
So let's just say I'm an average guy on the street. You've got the film. You've got the book. You're going to try to explain this to me. What happened? Tell me.
Well, when you look at how these towers. First of all, when the planes hit the towers, you cannot even see in the video that the. I mean, there was news cameras all around it, and those towers didn't hardly move. They swallowed those planes up as if they were nothing, like a bee had run into them, which shows how strong those towers were to swallow a plane up at that high a speed without really shaking or wobbling or cracking. So the planes did not damage the building all that much. They just
nope.
The planes hit the. Towers shook a little bit. You heard the
doink.
People inside saying they felt the tower sway, but it was like a strong winter storm. And then the tower stood back up again and then settled down and then stood there perfectly motionless.
This is really dumb, but it makes sense that this would be Eric's entry point into explaining how 9/11 was an inside job. Buildings like the Twin Towers are designed to sway because of the wind. Otherwise, it would be very dangerous.
Yeah.
And you would never even notice that wobble, even if it goes 6 inches. You would notice it if you were inside the building because you can subtly feel the sway, but you wouldn't notice it just watching a video.
Huh.
I used to work in Sears Tower, Willis Tower. Downtown, and it sucked. It was really uncomfortable because I wasn't used to it. I mean, I was a temp. I was only there for a short period of time. I never got to adjust to the feeling.
Yeah, you hadn't gotten your
building.
Sea legs.
And it really freaked me out. But if you were just to look at Willis Tower, you'd never see it moving.
Yeah, nobody's like, oh, look at the way that Willis is shaking today. Not happening.
They're giant buildings. And the kind of distance a building can buckle is not enough for you to detect. It feels like you should be able to, though. So Eric's able to use this as an introductory thing to throw out to blow some minds, despite it not really proving anything. It's classic conspiracy drivel.
Yeah, the gulf between what seems like it could be and should be true and what is so large that there's so many places where it's like, you can't understand how everything works You just can't.
Yeah, you can.
I can't understand how giant buildings work. I can do my best, well, but if put, I don't.
You put one block on another block.
I played Jenga and I'm not good at it.
Well, that's more about taking down the building.
Right.
So Hufschmid is an incredibly boring guest. He and Alex just have an interview that dances around the general most common talking points around 9/11 conspiracy theories, and it sucks. Naturally, they don't get into any of Eric's almost comical hatred of Jewish people, because Alex isn't trying to give the audience an accurate picture of the people he's presenting as experts that they should support. That would make it too clear to them what they're involved in. Eric Hufschmid sucks, and I've gone through a lot of his website to get a better sense of what he's all about. Everything is about the Jews. There's a lot of Holocaust denial in the mix, too. There's one article that I thought might be interesting as a break from the rampant anti-Semitism.
Right.
Because it was an interpretation of Katy Perry's video for California Girls.
So it's about how Katy Perry made it a Semitic video
California
that he had to hate.
California Girls,
oh,
were undeniable.
Oh, what's
Daisy Duke's bikinis
what,
on
what
top.
What did Pez have to say about Katy Perry?
So admittedly, that video is a clumsy take on Candyland that's intentionally a bit campy in its overt sexuality. That's true. It's a little bit much. Naturally, Eric believes that it's an allegory for how the Jews control pop stars as sex slaves. It's very boring, and it only includes a surface layer analysis of my favorite lyric of Snoop Dogg's entire career: bikinis, zucchinis, martinis, no weenies, just a king and his queenie. What a great line.
That's just mwah.
Bikinis, zucchinis, martinis, no weenies.
I will tell you this. That would not go unappreciated by Lord Byron. He would very much have enjoyed that. Yes.
I also love to imagine this party that he's throwing.
People I'll tell you what, Lord Byron would have been at one of those parties.
Okay, so here we zucchinis are blunts.
Yes.
Like it's weed.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah.
So you got blunts,
uh-huh.
Bikinis.
Yep.
And the drink of choice is a martini.
Martini.
Not a great party drink.
Well, it's not gonna be what is it going to be, a Negroni? Come on.
I would like a Mai Tai.
You would like a Mai Tai?
If I'm on the
doesn't
beach,
fit the rhyme scheme.
No, of course not. But a martini on the beach sounds terrible.
That does sound terrible.
What?
Yeah.
Straight gin and vermouth.
Yeah, that's not good.
Great.
That's not good.
But no weenies? Fine.
That's fine.
Yeah, no losers.
You don't want any weenies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So apparently this is a description of an orgy, according to Eric, which is, that's a snooze. Who cares?
Yeah.
There's an entire saga about this woman who apparently has been emailing Eric and wanting to marry him, but he breaks off contact with her out of fear that she might be a secret Jewish agent or possibly mentally ill.
Sure.
I'm
sorry. He is afraid that she
could be.
Might be mentally ill.
He suspects and speculates about how this could be a setup. Quote, one of the thoughts that passed through my mind is that Peggy could be used in a manner similar to Mark Chapman. Specifically, the Jews may be pushing for her to meet with me, and then the Jews would be able to kill both of us and make it appear as a murder and suicide by a mentally ill woman. Mm. So this is, he's lonely, like I said.
Yeah. Yeah.
He tries to reassure himself, but he just can't quite get there. Quote, Peggy sent me her photo, and she doesn't look Jewish to me, but I don't think it's possible to identify every Jew simply by the way they look. Only some of them fit the stereotype. Men are suckers for pretty women, but a female Jew is just as dangerous as a female shark. They're not our friends. Don't be fooled by their appearance. Control your stupid animal-like emotions and look at the evidence. Look through history and notice how the Jews have been treating us for thousands of years. They have never been anybody's friend.
Oh, so this is the guy they based Seven on.
Disgusting stuff.
That has got to be the journals. That has to be the diaries of a fucking serial killer.
It's really fucked up.
That is an insane fucking thing to, yikes.
So I was hunting high and low for an article about something that didn't trace back to a Jewish conspiracy theory. There's a lot of stuff on this site, and almost all of it is just somehow woven back to a complaint about Jews. Now, like, even like this whole thing about this woman.
Yeah,
it goes back to his anti-Semitism.
No, even rampant anti-Semites at this point have to be like, hey, dude, we think you just have a problem.
Chill.
Yeah, it's not the Jews that are causing your problems.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe we think that it's the Jews' fault for everything, but not for you, buddy.
So I was able to find one article.
Uh-huh.
One. And I will now read you some passages.
Okay. Okay.
Quote, I refrain from giving good reviews to products because I've only used a few of the thousands of products on the market. But
is this where you got the back shaver?
No.
Oh.
But I recently tried some underwear that is so much more comfortable than everything I've had in my life that I thought I would mention it in case some of you have been irritated by your underwear also.
Put in code anti-Semite at MeUndies.com.
It is a pouch style made by David Archie. This underwear is extremely comfortable for standing, sitting, or walking. But if you have to do a lot of movements of your pelvic area, such as crawling around an attic or fixing plumbing problems or doing exercise, the extreme movements can cause your penis to be pulled out of the pouch. But it remains comfortable even when that happens. How do you feel?
I just... Put it back in, man. Come on.
Quote,
put it back in. Put it back in. Don't put that in a review. Put it back in before you put it in a review.
Quote.
Okay?
Update, February 1st, 2020.
There's an update?
Yep. Okay. I tried their shorter version and their bikini version. I do not like the bikini version because after moving around a bit, the material moves a slight bit off my scrotum, allowing it to touch the skin of my leg.
I just, you know, people are more than just one thing. Mm-hmm. I think that's what we're learning.
He expounds on this underwear for what seems like the length of a novella.
It does seem to be going a while.
Quote, unfortunately, modern societies have such a problem with sex crimes and sexual inhibition that
this
the descriptions of the underwear avoid words such as testicles and penis.
Sir,
and instead,
I'm going to have to ask you to leave.
Use words like the boys and
junk. This is
junk.
A mall.
What makes this underwear so nice is that it does what I wondered was possible in a document that I posted almost 8 years ago, which is to provide a pouch for our testicles. This underwear goes even further and provides a pouch for our penis.
Oh, that's
That also, when it says 8 years ago, there's a hyperlink, and he did speculate about this 8 years prior.
Yep.
Pretty amazing.
Wow.
There are not a bunch of product reviews on this site, and as far as I can tell, this is the only one. He found some great underwear, so he's got to talk about it at length on his ridiculously anti-Semitic conspiracy theory site. What a great bit of free advertising for David Archie brand underwear. They've got to be thrilled. You seem confused.
I mean, what am I supposed to do with the existence of all of that simultaneously?
I don't know. How do you think it feels to be me?
I don't know.
I'm poking around this stupid website.
I don't know.
It's full of hate, and then there's a fucking underwear review where he complains about the bikini ones.
I don't know.
But if he doesn't like the bikini style, he can't come to Snoop Dogg's party.
That is true.
Because there's bikinis,
there is bikinis,
zucchinis,
only
martinis,
no weenies. Which means that those underwear where your weenie pops out, get them out of here!
I think that's a metaphorical weenie in Snoop's song.
I think he's a literal weenie in this song.
I wish he had a breakdown of all of Katy Perry's videos, like Roar, Last Friday Night.
See, the problem with this is that you can't be a rampant, vicious anti-Semite and then do a one-off product review. Mm-hmm. You know, that's got to be like a new weekly segment for
you. Yeah, I was curious about some of these other products.
Nonstop bile and hate. Now it's like, oh, this bicycle... It doesn't switch gears. No gear change. Solid ride
but
in city
the
streets.
The seat stuck to my scrotum.
they would all be so scrotum based. Yeah. Everything would be about in relation to where his penis or his scrotum is.
So he goes on and on about his various thoughts about this underwear. Then, for reasons that escape me, it ends with this section, which I will read to you in full.
Okay. Okay.
Quote, since this document is probably going to be considered obscene by some people, I may as well mention another issue that adults ought to be discussing without hysteria.
Oh my God.
Specifically, some men believe that having a large, floppy penis makes them better than the men who have smaller penises.
Holy shit, you are not telling me that this eventually goes on a small penis rant. Oh my God.
Some men believe that having a large floppy penis makes them better than the men who have smaller penises or who have, quote, accordion type penis that compresses to a smaller size.
No, no, no,
growers
no.
and showers.
No,
you know what I'm talking about?
No.
Some people have been so convinced of this that they're stretching their penis to make it bigger, such as Roberto Cabrera, and businesses are offering products for penis stretching. And one of the questions on the Amazon site that sells the David Archie underwear is from a man who's hoping that the underwear will make his penis look larger. The children who grow up in the USA could pick up the attitude that men should have giant penises, and that women should have giant breasts, or how many people actually want such features in their spouse. Furthermore, are those people, quote, normal, or are they mentally ill? Do, quote, normal women actually care whether a man has a large floppy penis?
You know, as a writer, I will tell you this. Whenever you have certain little phrases, mm-hmm. that can kind of gear us towards what your point of view or perspective that you're bringing in is. Mm-hmm. If you have repeated large floppy penis, that is something that you view as a negative, my friend.
Quote, normal women actually care whether a man has a large floppy penis. I realize that women want erect penises to be a certain size and shape, but how many women care how long a penis is when it's limp?
That's just fact.
How many women even want to look at a man's limp penis?
Hey, who is this? Chris Rock?
My opinion is that giant floppy penises are an annoyance. My penis will compress like an accordion when it's cold, and I think that it is much more comfortable compared to when it is warm and flopping around, although this David Archie underwear is making that flopping problem disappear. So that's the end of his underwear review.
Oh, God. Oh, my God.
Right. So, I mean, there's a surreality to this that I feel like sometimes I want to be able to allow people who are listening to our show to get a glimpse of.
Yeah.
That you're listening to Alex's show. He introduces a guest. You look into them a little bit. You find this horrific, bordering on exterminationism type approach towards Jewish people.
Yeah.
Some of it masked in a pretend opposition to Zionism.
Sure.
Some of it just masked in a
pseudo-scientific bullshit. Yeah.
Right. And you know that is unacceptable on 100 different levels.
Yeah.
Then you poke around a little bit more in the site and you find this ridiculous shit like the Katy Perry video review being contextualized as Jewish people having pop star sex slaves, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you go a little bit further and you find this nonsense and you're like, this is, I just don't know what to do.
Yeah, yeah.
How do I not share this is what I'm saying.
Yeah, it is. Oh, man. Because hate is what this guy's built his life around. Like, his entire life is geared around hate, period. And his focus of it is on Jewish people for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not obviously for anything that makes any sense. Because then you would have to have an argument that it makes sense,
but I think,
which it doesn't.
Well, I think that the way you can kind of make a little bit of sense of it is that so many historical conspiracy theories have led downhill towards anti-Semitism.
Sure, sure.
And so if you are getting into a hateful conspiratorial mind view and you start exploring a ton of things,
mm-hmm.
odds are you will encounter material that takes you down that road.
Right.
So I think it's more likely to lead to that than to lead to other conclusions.
Right, 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 right.
And that's the only way I can make sense of it. But in terms of the ideas making sense, obviously,
right.
That doesn't.
Of course. Yeah. But it is in a picture not of somebody with like some sort of mastermindy hate that is built around like trying to achieve something or exploit something or anything along those lines. And it really does feel like this is a person who is isolated.
Yeah.
Just insane. In need of so many things, you know?
I think
hate is fucked up and it's also like fucked up, you know?
I think that a number of hints you could get from his website are definitely showing some needs not being met.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
In no way does that excuse the direction that it goes to.
No, of course.
But I think that also this big floppy penis underwear review, it highlights another thing that I think is crucial that you start to see. And that is like with Alex, he's a fucking monster who puts out hateful, bigoted material, oftentimes crypto in nature, sometimes hiding behind other rationales for things.
Mm-hmm.
But he also sings along with the Highwaymen.
Right.
And he also talks over You Belong to the City. And he also likes sci-fi to an unhealthy extent. Like, there's other facets of his personality. Michael Savage came up earlier, and I used to listen to a ton of Michael Savage's show. And he is a horrific bigot as well. But sometimes he tells a story and he can weave an amazing yarn about old time San Francisco eateries.
Sure, sure.
And stuff like that. Like, there are other facets of these people's personalities that sometimes are like, this is bizarre. Bigot people aren't only a bigot.
Sure.
And that is also part of what makes them, it makes some people be distracted from their bigotry.
Right, right. I think I'm
Maybe not in the case of this underwear review.
No.
That's not distracting.
I'm absolutely not trying to excuse his hate or provide an explanation for it.
I didn't think you were.
Yeah, of course. I think it's like, with this particular situation, there are lanes of bigotry that you can kind of push people down or classify people under. You know, you have people like Tucker, who is a virulent bigot,
mm-hmm.
who's smart enough to hide just enough of it to pass, who is using it for evil
by vetting his guests
or editing his guests, and he's doing all of this in service of money and power and all of this shit. And this guy is not that, you know.
No,
he's a bigot. But he's not that. He's something fucking different.
Well, he's somebody who has far more of a willingness than Tucker or Alex to just be upfront about the hate that he has.
Yeah.
And then simultaneously, he's somebody who's like a little bit too old to experience blogging. You know, like,
sure.
that's the kind of sense that you get from a number of these articles, is like somebody who discovers that blogs exist and think that everybody needs to hear all their thoughts about underwear.
Yeah.
Or like, this is going to be somehow a meaningful, is a pouch underwear, like, is that revolutionary at whatever point he's writing this?
Not sure.
I don't think so. Couldn't you just wear briefs?
I don't know. I just don't know.
Anyway,
I've never put as much thought into underwear as he put into, I guess, the words big floppy penis. I have not put that much thought into underwear.
Yeah, it's a compound noun for this fellow.
True.
So here's one last clip of Alex. And mm-hmm. and this is another thing that I think is important to recognize.
It's so important that you get this $22 two-hour video. Also, the $22 book full of, I don't know, over 100 color pictures and diagrams.
Ooh.
This is a lot of research. Incredible work went into this. You need to have the book and the video. Infowars.com or prisonplanet.com. You support Eric's work, you support my work. At the same time, you get a powerful tool to wake your friends and family up.
Alex is taking his access to his audience and using it to funnel monetary support to Eric,
mm-hmm.
and simultaneously he's selling his material, so Alex is making money off getting the audience to support and buy Eric's materials.
Yep.
Now, when we talk about Sandy Hook stuff, one of the things that is really important to consider in terms of, you know, a lot of people like to say, oh, he was wrong about something and then he apologized. Why is it so bad? But when you really look back at this period and you look at the way that Alex was funneling his audience to support Wolfgang Halbig,
mm-hmm.
and facilitate his ability to carry out the harassment, to fight the legal battles that he was in, the way Alex directed and advocated for his audience to give them money.
Yeah.
And the way that Alex sold their stuff on his website.
Mm-hmm.
That is a relevant piece of this. Through the machine that Alex has built and the audience trust and access that he has like given extreme people access to money that they would not have otherwise.
Yep.
Wolfgang Halbig didn't have access to a giant platform before Alex allowed that. Eric Hufschmidt was on public access interviews and shit. Like, he didn't, like, even Alex in 2003 was probably a big gig for him.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And so this is a piece of what Alex is and does.
Mm-hmm.
Without him, I mean, nowadays, it's probably diminished somewhat because there's so many internet-based platforms that have large audiences and stuff. But at a relevant period of time like this and into the early 2010s, like, Alex was something that was able to be a monetary victory for these extremists. Being able to be on Alex's show led to, you know, probably access to a lot of stuff you wouldn't have access to otherwise.
Totally. And the way that it was spread then, when there weren't those million different outlets and million different internet spaces for it to grow, the way that Alex had built that, I mean, you can see all the guys that we still see around now, you know, like, if it weren't for the way that that was disseminated,
a lot of those guys
wouldn't have quite the same
power. Some didn't have staying power, though.
Well, that's fair.
I don't think Webster Tarpley is that big
I'm not saying he was a kingmaker.
Right. Gerald Celente is still just hosting the fourth hour of Alex's show.
Yeah, that's true.
So it didn't work out for everybody.
No.
Anyway, we come to the end of this episode, and like I said, a little bit shorter, but you know what? Sometimes you end up reading a lot of an asshole's blog. And I do think that it's really important to recognize this stuff, though. This guest is such a great illustration of this, sort of the counterpoint to the argument that Alex's show didn't used to be so bigoted. It wasn't like that stuff. No, it was baked in. It was there.
Yep.
The perception of it might not have been as easily accessible by a passive viewer.
Yeah.
But it was there for sure.
I don't mind that this is shorter. I feel like this guy has given me a lot to sit with. Like, I know
just don't sit on your scrotum.
I know our episode's done, but when I'm going to be driving later, just going like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Fuck that fucking guy.
Yep.
Jesus, fuck. Why is he obsessed with big floppy penises?
This is the sort of unsung emotional labor that you do for the podcast. Is this struggling
unsung
after the fact?
The
you know?
Struggling to survive.
Yeah.
to be, it is like, oh, okay. All right, I touched that hot stove.
Mm-hmm.
All right, but I'll record again on Tuesday.
I learned
I'll
a little
bit. I'll be there. Yeah. I'll be there on Tuesday.
So we will be back, Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
But until then, we have a website.
We do. It's knowledgefight.com.
Yep. We're also on Twitter.
We are on Twitter. It's @knowledge_fight.
Yep. We'll be back. But until then, I'm Neo. I'm Leo. I'm DZX Clark. Hey, check this out.
What's up?
I'm opening up my coat.
Oh,
what do you
shit.
See here?
Oh,
have you read
my
this?
God.
Have you read this?
Is that the... No, is that the wiki?
It is. Got to read this shit,
fuck,
bro.
And now here comes the sex robots.
Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.